This is the meeting of June 18th, 2018. Desert Community Energy about to start.
I know.
It's 2:30. We can start. Everyone's here. Welcome to order. Roll call. Everyone's here.
Cathedral City.
Something lost its power since
then.
There we go.
Okay.
On the internet.
Look at
this.
Yeah.
No, this one's colored.
It was Linda's doing.
I don't remember.
Do we have
Seabag Palm Desert?
Jeff and Don, are you on the line?
Okay. Jeff is here, Benjamin. Thank you.
Jeff is here. Okay, good. Hi, Jeff. That works.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Afternoon.
Howdy.
Does that mean
Don is out here? Don, are you on the
line? He's supposed to be calling in.
No, I'll just...
We'll go to public comments.
There he is.
Good afternoon.
Don, is that you? Don?
Good afternoon, folks. This is Don on board.
Hi, Don. Okay.
Welcome.
Just getting started.
Kim Floyd, Palm Desert. I would like to encourage the board to set a specific date for when you will put in place the advisory council. And as it relates to the advisory council, I would like to ask that specific focus be given to underrepresented communities. If we look around the table in terms of who the decision makers are here, it may not fully represent our communities. Early access to public benefit funds, I've mentioned that before, but I want to push the board a little bit on that so that we can use those funds locally and make decisions about those funds locally as sooner rather than later. And encourage each of the cities that are part of Desert Community Energy to adopt 100% clean energy package for your city's operations. Thank you.
Thank you. And you should probably know that Palm Springs has actually already voted to do that. And we will be discussing it at Cathedral City on July 11th at our next council meeting. Do we have any board member or director comments?
So a couple things. One is, and I appreciate the slides we got just in time for the council meeting, because I know that was a tight turnaround, but I still think there's some confusion about the different costs between the two programs. In some places it was about 1.5% in actual energy, other places it was 3%. And I think it's a lot. So we need to really clarify that. I didn't show the last two slides just because it was unclear. And so, obviously, our staff is unclear as well. So I just think we need to, I think it's 1.5% in actual on someone's bill. And
roughly.
And that's the number we should be using, not 3% on any cheap purchases. People don't understand what that is. But the calculation was a little confusing. So just as we look at doing this moving forward, the rest of it was great. So just, but there's confusion out clearly among some of the public and some of the council members on what the difference is. The other thing is on how we go about the opt-up portion is whether it's some of us as board member staff, what we do with some of the larger institutional entities, especially public entities, think college district, school board. I heard the school board adopted the desert energy system, but I think we want to go encourage them to opt up and provide them with the kind of information that's provided to the cities so we can get some of the larger producers who are especially public agencies who have a green energy plan to actually opt up and explain it's not that much of a cost difference. So just something we should think about and how we can all help. I'm happy to go to different entities and make that recommendation if that's the best choice, but how we could make sure we're getting them that information right off the back, because they're all going to consider it for the first time, and that may be a great time to do that. And the only other comment I had was, and I think came up at the last meeting, is if we could see some of the PR stuff and mail it ahead of time so we can all review it and give some input on it before it's live on the web or sent out. I think you mentioned it at the last meeting, and I think there's more going out, but I think we could, you know, give input. And it would be great to get ideas for how we can reach out in our communities to encourage people to be part of the program and also to opt up as an option. And so having that information, because a lot of us will go dark pretty soon, will come sooner than we think, and during that window, people will be getting notices. So what can we do to reach out to our communities? For example, in Palm Springs, we now have, you know, between now and July 14th, 13th or something, we have 5 meetings on district elections. We're actually going out to some of our communities and having meetings in the communities and sort of following up on the public comment. It's a great opportunity for me, since I'm on that subcommittee, to mention what people's options are and give some education. So maybe some talking points and opportunities for at least a few of us to help get information out, and whether it's Valley Voices or whatever else, but to really try and get the word out that way that we could do.
Maybe do a Valley Voice, even. Do a Desert Sign.
We can.
Especially if the three cities all do the 100% carbon free, that would be a great opportunity for us to encourage people who can do it. Yeah, this is a great opportunity to protect the environment, and you're not paying any more than you're currently paying.
I was going to say, we have been working with cities to target specifically, you know, residents within our community. So I know we just hit the Palm Desert. Certainly we can work on Valley Voice.
Yeah.
And the platform, the one challenge will be the Desert Sun's readership is far greater than these three cities. So if I'm living in La Quinta or whatever,
And Erica just gave me a look like, really, Tom? Because one of the things I've been encouraging is focusing within the city because of how much confusion there is. Even when we focus within a city, and then you combine that with other messages, and when folks in Rancho Mirage hear that they're getting a 6% decrease, or whatever it is, they're measuring against a different denominator oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And so we're really trying to keep this within each of their communities. And yes, to all of those things.
Yeah.
They're all good ideas. We'll work with you on them.
Yeah, just to tag on that. I got my notice a couple of days ago, and I tried to ask myself, if I wasn't steeped in this, would I read this letter?
No.
So, I think at some point we're going to get a lot of surprised people if we don't figure out some way to induce them to read it. So, despite the confusion, I think I would support Valley Voice or trying to secure some Desert Sun coverage.
And some kind of general topic, do we expect Palm Desert to be considering the same thing that Cathedral City and Palm Springs did?
I haven't been party to a conversation about it, so we need to take it up.
Sure.
Have you?
No, this hasn't come up, but I certainly would. I'm curious when we bring it. Does it come up through the council comments, or does staff take it on? Let me put it in my notes, and I'll talk to Lori about how we want to
do it. It does provide a great opportunity to go out to all of our communities and say, please do as we do, not just as we say.
It's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And sooner would be better than
later,
so if staff initiates it, it could come up at the next meeting.
The good news is there's one person at City Hall who has a master list of all of our SCE accounts, so they just have to A or B,
And we can get you an analysis of the impact of the carbon-free. We did that for Palm Springs.
Yeah, once you see the cost, it was surprisingly not very much.
Well,
and yours is much larger than theirs.
Right.
And I thought we'd already.
We do actually have it. Yeah. We need to finalize the GHG emission reduction.
Because you had to have that analysis for the it's specified in the contract in a very high level.
Yeah, have that analysis. We did it already for the City of Palm Springs. We have it for Palm Desert and for Cathedral City. There was one part we wanted to provide you with a greenhouse gas impact analysis that showed you the impact of that.
Which was amazing. I mean, that was really powerful.
Which we just got for your city, so we
should be able to. Did that go to Tracy?
Or? You know, I haven't sent it yet to Tracy because we wanted to, we just got the greenhouse gas impact just this morning from TEA, so we will put that in there and send it around.
That was terrific.
She was going to put it on the last council meeting, and I said we didn't have all the details yet, so I moved it to the 11th. So.
Okay, we should be able to get that to you by tomorrow, next couple days.
And am I remembering correctly that the cost of carbon-free is basically the cost of status quo?
Yes,
so we've budgeted.
I have questions because I obviously didn't see the PowerPoint presentation that you guys got. So I'm somewhat concerned about what you meant by the fact that the numbers weren't clear at the end.
Well, we'll fix that for you.
Yes, I think it was a 3%. I think the final had a 3% reduction, and then it said if everyone did the 3% reduction, then how much would be saved? And it's really about 1.5%. So it's about half. That was all. That can be fixed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Semantics.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
And just with respect to a number of these ideas, I couldn't agree more. This is the time to reach out to those customers because there isn't a negative impact on their budget per se.
Right.
Doing it next year and saying it's going to increase your cost by 3% or 1.5% makes it more challenging.
Right.
And taking advantage of your volunteerism, perhaps while you're not quite so busy in the summer, if you are here, is fantastic. We've been reaching out to the major users, generally with information, but not with a push. We've been agnostic about the information. I don't think we have to be. I think we could say this is an we encourage you. This is an opportunity to step up and help the community and the globe. Let's identify that list of major users for our board members and which ones we've made contact with, which ones we haven't, which ones we're waiting for a call back, and maybe make some assignments, not to just three, but to six or five. You still have an alternate is there an alternate here? We have two folks in each of your cases that I think would be willing to help too, and we'll put you to work if you're willing to.
Absolutely,
sure.
Yeah, and on Desert has our 2x2 meeting this week with CDWD, so I'm assuming they're a big user.
They are.
Got to pump that water.
And we cover two school districts.
Yeah,
right. We send you to Palm Springs. So.
We've got COD and
All right.
Love the hotels.
Yeah, I was going to say, to Ben's point, we're actually at the Hospitality Association this Thursday, the Palm Springs Hospital. We're the speaker before the speaker.
Oh, great.
And so we can certainly point out your challenge.
And then with respect to getting you information before it goes out, I'll be happy to do that. And you understand we're pressed on some of this stuff. It's not going to happen every time to have every piece of information. And things like the website, if you go on there and you see something, please get a hold of Eric.
Mailing's a tougher.
Yeah, it is, but we tried to go in advance. You caught something earlier on. We've made that fix next go around. But we can't do it on every piece of collateral material.
And this is probably part of your presentation, but my understanding is that the first mailing is actually in the mail.
Yes, I received it.
I haven't seen it yet.
So just to clarify, the mailing went out in batches over the last week. In fact, the last of three batches just went out today. So they started last Monday, so some of you would have received them somewhere in that time frame, but others might be in this last batch, which just went out today. So that will hopefully show up in your mailbox. If you, for whatever reason, if you don't receive it, please let us know. But they should be getting out. We've been getting some calls. I'm checking in with the call center. So those calls go to our call center, which is operated by Calpine, and they can answer any question. It's all tapered to our specific program, and we'll get some feedback from them. We actually have a dashboard that we can go on and look at. It's a little early yet to get any results, but once we start getting results, we'll be able to see the opt-out rate on a, just on a daily basis. So that's all.
Anything else on? Let's go to consent calendar. Are there any questions? questions on the consent calendar? Items A, B, and C.
Move to approve.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? Motion passes. That takes us to item 6. Item A, update on our progress.
And some of these items are associated with Kim's comments, questions, suggestions. On the resolution process, no information there. That's been done. We're buying RA from Southern California Edison. PCIA, one of your consent calendar items, was related to our joint effort with LA and West Riverside County. If you remember, we went in as partners early on in this process and are following very similar tracks. What I call LA, and I can never remember their new name because they're
Clean Power Alliance.
Clean Power Alliance, which will become the largest CCA in the state, and CVAG are essentially on the same schedule. West Riverside County is behind us because they did not meet the deadline for even establishing the JPA. My understanding is they've got Hemet, right?
First City just signed up as an FYI
to you, so it looks like they are going to be moving forward with the formation of a JPA of some scale. Approach. On other steps, we mentioned Palm Springs. Congratulations on that 100% unanimous vote. I don't think it required much arm twisting.
No.
And it probably won't in Cathedral City either. And if we could provide support in Palm Desert, fantastic. We could probably get those slides to your two cities by the next day or two. Mm-hmm. Right, Katie?
We'll send that out with the information analysis.
Great. And it is impressive, you know, the little steps you are making are having a big GHG impact in your community. So it's a big deal. Staffing, we have the two positions we're out for recruitment. We got a fair number of applicants we have not interviewed yet. I expect to have perhaps those positions selected in the next couple of weeks. Community outreach, we've talked a little bit about that, even in the context of this, and getting the notices out. On the community advisory committee, we continue just kind of, in some ways, perhaps punting, which you may not want to hear on this. It isn't our highest priority right now unless the board tells us it is, and if you want to establish a date, you can do so. My perspective on this is reaching out to underserved groups to come to a meeting where you tell them there's not much to do until we get our legs under our feet may not be the most productive use of their time. However, having Mr. Floyd is already a community advisory committee member by virtue of hearing everything you do. One of the first steps might be for our board members to look around the community, whether people are underprivileged or underserved or otherwise, and might encourage them to start showing up at meetings. I remember City of La Quinta used to have that policy for people that want to be appointed to council, show up at a meeting or two. This might be a good opportunity over the next, during the formation stage, and then come 2019, which sounds like a long way away, but it isn't. A CAC could be formed and they could be given a role to play. But until there's money and margin there, having a CAC talk about renewables and everything else might be having them spin their wheels.
Well, I think early 2019 is a reasonable, specific objective, and we'll probably have a better chance of recruiting people from underrepresented communities after this is in place and people are starting to have some experience with it and some thoughts about it.
We'll put it on for the January agenda to have the formation of a CAC at this stage. And I still encourage us all to think about people that may want to participate. And they can show up to a couple meetings between now and then. They get quite an introduction to the subject.
And I think in our council meeting, we can have discussions as well to see if there are people who are interested in participating.
It's a great
idea.
Or
council members who have ideas of who might be willing to participate.
And just, especially for folks who are working, it's challenging to come to an hour and a half meeting in the middle of the day, and if you're coming from out from Palm Springs, you're talking
2.5 hours. So, and so when we set the advisory committee meeting, if we want to get a diverse group of people, we need to be thinking about maybe not in the middle of the day. When that comes up.
And maybe doing it in a more central location, like Cathedral City.
Just some kind of things we should think about as time comes. I've been driving there a lot lately.
That's,
we appreciate it.
Katie, is there anything else?
Tom, if we could just check in on our next meeting date schedules. We do have, at this point, meetings scheduled every month. And so, you know, as far as the July meeting, that's the 16th. Is that date working for everybody? And then we, our date for August, if we, I guess we could look at that one as a, if we need a meeting. It will be a little bit after the official launch and service of customers, but that date is the 20th of August. Does that look like a day that works for everybody? We'll be around. Okay. We'll just proceed with those dates and let you know if there's, for whatever reason, we don't need a meeting. Great. Thanks. That's it.
All right. That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's going to take us to item 6B, which is really our 2018-2019 budget.
And Mr. Dame, this is your item. You've gotten the staff report on the budget already. Don, is there any change or anything that you want to highlight? We've got your slides up right now.
Okay. Just one quick change to note on the staff report, and this was noted by our chairman, that the pie chart on the top of page 2 of the staff report, it currently says fiscal year 2019-2020 DCE budget, and that label should be fiscal year 2018-2019 DCE budget. So we'll wait till next year to do next year's budget. We'll do this year's this year.
Don, the same thing is true actually in the budget itself.
Is that right? Is that correct, too? Then that should be correct again, and do the same correction in the budget. I must have just mislabeled those tables, or I was thinking a year ahead. Yes, I see. That's correct. And in the budget itself, on page 3, that should be fiscal year 2018-2019 as well. The numbers are indeed for 2018-2019, so it's just the heading that's mislabeled.
And Don, the slides that we have up now, are they the same ones we had last month?
They're a little teeny bit different, and if you've got 5 or 10 minutes, maybe I'll just run through it. We can start at page four.
Certainly.
Well,
page 4 of the slides or the...
Of the PowerPoint.
Okay.
I'll stick with the PowerPoint and not go to the budget or the staff report unless asked or requested.
All right.
I think we're
on page 4 of the PowerPoint. Just a summary. This is, the budget is for the first 12 months of the fiscal year starting June 1 of 2018. July 1 of 2018 going through June 30th of 2019. And the bulk of the inputs are related to the TEA pro forma, especially with regard to power costs, loads, and anticipated revenues as adjusted for the most current information we have. Otherwise, everything is the same on this particular slide as it was last time. If we can skip to slide 5... note that we've inserted from staff's viewpoint our intent when we put together this budget that we will subsequently develop over the budget year a mechanism to track actual versus budget projections throughout the year and report those to the board. We will be tracking timing of both payments and receipts to make sure we have a thorough handle on cash flow situation. We anticipate, to the extent cash flows allow, to repay the pre- and post-launch borrowings and deferrals and postings that have been made on behalf of DCE per the schedule that's identified in the budget. We'll be building cash reserves to the extent we are able. We'll keep the board, management, and staff informed of our financial condition, serve the interests of our members and communities, and adhere to adopted board policies and directives. And if we look on slide 6, which is correctly labeled the 2018-2019 budget summary, you see we're projecting total revenues of $66.8 million, total costs of operations of...
what's going on with the slides?
Yeah.
He's trying to find those slides.
Going, but is he...
He's on word.
Don?
Is he doing it?
Yes.
No.
Why would
I'm doing
this?
Because I'm trying to find the slide he's on.
Don,
he's
like,
what's...
Sorry.
Let's just slow down. We're having a hard time knowing what number 6 is versus number 4 versus 3. Describe the slide that you're referring to from now on.
I'm looking at the DCE fiscal year 2018-19 budget summary pie chart slide.
So thank you.
It has a mostly blue piece of pie on it.
Okay.
We're there.
We're there. And that should be, is that slide 6 on your screen?
No, slide 1.
Yes, slide 1.
Just don't worry about the numbering. Just describe the slide, and we'll find it. So we're on the pie chart.
Okay. Well, we'll proceed from there. So what this slide shows is the overall summary of the budget. The total area of the pie chart is $66.8 million, which is anticipated to be the total revenues to be received by DCE in the next budget year. That is comprised of approximately $58.9 million of wholesale power supply costs, about $5.2 million of total operating costs, including all the vendors and other mailings and internal staff that's scheduled to be added. And a residual, this is a little change from last time, we'll talk to it a little bit further as we go through the next couple of slides, a overall residual of about $2.7 million at the end of the budget year. Let's shift to the next slide.
Don,
this shows just a line item summary. I'm not going to go through it. It's the a little bit more line item detail of the pie chart that you just saw, just showing that the $2.7 million residual at the end of the year is elliptically circled at the bottom of the slide. The next slide gives a pictorial view of where we expect budget costs and residuals to accumulate to over the first 3 years of DCE operations, and you see that we're now projecting that there'll be about $22.6 million in residuals on hand at the end of the third operating year of the budget.
Don?
Yes.
Can you,
yes.
I mean, I think the biggest change between the original budget we saw and the budget we're looking at now is really this sheet, because the original budget had a net of about $40 million. Can you talk about the implications and the reasoning for that?
Yeah, there are actually several different things going on. What we've done over the last 1 week to 3 months is refine power costs, which have gone up. They've not only gone up in South of PAC 15 in Southern California, they've also gone up in Northern California. You've had occasion to buy your RA costs. Those are higher than originally estimated. And revenues are, we're conservatively assuming, are a few dollars, a couple dollars a megawatt hour less than the original pro forma that was done nearly a year ago now. The combination of those actions really drives down the margin. And everybody here will understand the budget is affected dollar for dollar by any increase in cost, and it's affected dollar for dollar by any decline in revenue. And I think we can maybe, if you can jump ahead to the slide that has the three stars on it. If you have that one, it shows end of fiscal year 19 estimated asset position. Do you have that slide in front of you?
This one's not in your...
It's not in the book, but...
Yeah, this slide's
not in the book. Okay. Yeah, it's not in the book.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is the one that helps to explain that. The May board package had us at about a little over $6 million residual at the end of the first year. And at the board meeting itself, we had included some revised wholesale power cost estimates based on higher prices in Southern California. That gave us the May board update, which put that number at about $4 million. You'll see where the $4 million line, that goes to the green star. And where we are today, based on updated and double-checked information based on the best of our ability, puts us just under $3 million at the end of the first year. That's the 2.7 plus million-dollar number. And the lines on that curve show the potential impacts from revenue declines and or cost increases. Obviously, if revenues increase and costs decline, you move to the left on the curve. As revenues decline and costs increase, you move to the right. You move to the right of the curve. So this is where we are today, based on again about a $3 increase on average in wholesale power costs, and just slightly less than a $3 per megawatt hour decrease in anticipated average revenues from the customer base. So that gives us the difference that went from about $40 million at the end of year three about a month ago to now somewhere in the mid-$20 million range anticipated by the end of year three now. And, of course, all of these can and will be affected by actual events that intervene between now and the end of year three. The economics, nonetheless, are quite solid, and staff, and my recommendation is to adopt the budget for fiscal year 18-19 as presented to you in your package today.
Is the budget still based upon a 10% opt-out rate?
That's correct. We are still assuming a 10% opt-out rate. Actual experience has been in the range of 3 to 4% on most of the existing CCAs. I would expect that DCE will experience something less than a 5% opt-out rate. The extra load that you will experience if the opt-out rate really is halved will help to offset some of the costs and will increase the reserves available at the end of the year commensurately. It's not dollar for dollar because you do have to buy power to serve the folks that don't opt out, so you'll have to deduct the power costs. You get the anticipated revenue less the anticipated costs of serving those extra customers.
And just as a reminder, perhaps even stating the obvious, what the budget does hold firm is the cost benefit to the customer,
right,
for those that go with Desert Saver anyway. And obviously there are other benefits that can be quantified if they go with 100% carbon free. But the benefits not only to the ratepayer, but to the community at large because of multiplier effects of having that money in our economy rather than in Rosemead.
That's correct.
If we were to look out 5 years instead of three, or 2.5 as we're doing, 2.75, would we still be in the same ballpark with respect to a net bottom line?
Yeah, what you're seeing, your first year, you're encumbered with paying back like the $500,000 deposit for the CalISO and the $100,000 to the CPUC and some of the amounts that were forwarded between and amongst Calpine and TEA. In subsequent years, you won't have as much of those burdens tacked onto your budget. So if you're looking out to fiscal year two, fiscal year three, for example, you're seeing net reserves at the end of those years on the order of $10 to $12 million a year, as opposed to the $2.7 million we're seeing at the end of the current fiscal year. That tended to be the case with most of the other operating CCAs. The first particular year up and running tended to be just a little bit leaner than the subsequent years, depending upon what their startup cost structure may have been. So if we extrapolate a little bit to year five, if we're forecasting in the range of $25 million at the end of year three, going out to year five, add another $20 to $25 million to that, you'll in essence be about doubling that. You should be close to $50 million. Accumulated margin, net margin by the end of year five.
The other factor that will change with time is we will not be paying for our credit through our consultants. And that has a significant impact on our budget for the next few years. But once we have reserves, there's an additional adder that we're not paying for that credit through TEA. So there's a feedback loop that reinforces board policy, and that is be fiscally sound. The minute we get to those levels, we then create more opportunities to increase that margin and do good things with it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks. Helpful.
Yeah, that's correct. You're paying a TDA, a dollar a megawatt hour for credit support, and while that does provide value where you build your own credit and negotiate your own bilateral contracts or a share of bilateral contracts to meet your load, that dollar a megawatt hour will be commensurately reduced.
Thanks. Any questions on budget? Okay, we have a recommendation to approve resolution number 2018-02, which is adopting the 2018-2019 fiscal year annual budget. Do we have a motion?
Sure.
I'll move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Good work, Don. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, that takes us to the Net Energy Metering Program.
The theme here is following up some of my last statements. The board has said that fiscal integrity is your highest priority. Obviously, pass along as much savings as we can to the ratepayer or consumer. After that, fiscal integrity of the organization. And frankly, 6 months ago, I was hoping to have a really exciting net energy metering program to offer you. Instead, Ben's going to offer you three options that are not terribly exciting to begin with. But we are, you'll hear our staff is recommending a relatively conservative approach here. So with that, Ben.
Thanks for that great setup, Tom. So the recommendation before you is to approve a net energy metering program that is equal to Southern California Edison's NEM program for existing and future solar customers, with the option to review a more robust program in the future once financial uncertainties are made clear. When DCE first formed, some of the goals were established, including rate savings, reducing energy demand, and promoting growth of renewable resources for the region. the board on April 16th did approve a conceptual NEM program that would at minimum be equal to the current NEM program offered by SCE, and then obviously bring back more additional information analysis. Staff worked with our T team, Don Dame and Sean Marshall, to evaluate the benefits of the financial impacts of our DCE NEM program in comparison with other CCA NEM programs and SCE's NEM program. Based on the information provided by SCE verifying the net consumption and general amounts, generation amounts for our potential DCE NEM customers, and considering variables such as the number of solar projects that were installed the prior year and how many we can anticipate for the upcoming year, we present these three options for you to consider. The first would be for DCE not to offer an NEM program at this time until staff can further assess benefits to both customers and DCE. The second option would be to offer a NEM program at the same rate as SCE, that SCE provides to NEM customers. Due to the uncertainty with the PCIA costs and shifting energy markets, staff recommends this conservative approach until we approve, until after launch and begin building reserves. And then we can reevaluate at a later date our NEM program to determine what additional incentives we may be able to include to help increase the growth within the community. The third option would be for DCE to duplicate Southern California Edison's NEM program, but include additional incentives, such as a one-time rebate amount or an adder to the price which DCE currently pays for surplus generation for its NEM customers. I was going to go through these later. the table one here shows that in the staff report, bless you, the additional cost to DCE if the board chose to offer an adder from a half a cent above SCE's current wholesale rate up to 3 cents above it. Staff also analyzed the option for a one-time incentive of $500 to new solar installations in order to further promote solar growth in the region. A total of 1,573 solar permits were issued within the last 12 months from the year three communities. And if we estimate 1,500 new solar projects for next year, DCE, it would cost DE $750,000 in incentives at that $500 amount. So staff determined that this one-time incentive is fiscally infeasible at this time, and we have our recommendation of option number two. Discuss.
Does this make sense?
Complete.
Yes.
Excellent.
Thank you, Ben.
Sure.
Kathleen, did you have a question?
I did. Do we, consumers have solar through a variety of different types of contractual arrangements. Some people have purchased solar, some people have leased solar, some people have power purchase agreements. Do we know whether in all instances the consumer is the person potentially benefiting from net metering, or under some of those other arrangements, is it the commercial supplier who potentially benefits from an improved net metering policy? Is the question clear?
Yeah.
In other words, if somebody has a power purchase agreement, is it the consumer who's potentially benefited, or is it the company with which they've contracted?
In my understanding, with the way purchase power agreements work, you're agreeing to a certain term to buy power at that price. Correct. So depending on how that contract's structured, if it says 5 cents above Edison's rate or maybe 2 cents below Edison's rate, or if it just says you're going to buy it at 15 cents per kilowatt hour for the duration of this contract, then the holder of that or the creator, the consumer, I mean, commercial
supplier
is the one who's going to benefit for those kind of contracts.
That's what I would expect. So that, as well as everything else you've said, causes me to solidly agree that option two is the preferred option for now. I just think two things. We need to learn more about this before we can take a stab at what effectively incentivizes more solar. And two, with half of our residual having evaporated in yes. 1 month's time, there is a certain incentive to be financially prudent. So I think two is the way to go as we learn more.
A couple more questions. So our plan at this point would be to take everyone who's on net energy metering and convert them to DCE as of August?
So that would be a to-be-determined date that we would have to discuss. One of the analyses that we're trying to do is when would be the best time to enroll those customers so that they don't lose their credits with Edison. So we're trying to see if maybe in the wintertime after they've used up the credits or, you know, when the best time to enroll them. And then should we have an annual true-up date, or should we do them monthly? So those are options that we'll still need to consider.
We haven't made those decisions yet.
And if you go with option two, mm-hmm. your policy will govern our administration of this. You probably don't want to know the gory details of our conversations with Edison on what is best, and our discussion with the CCAs and what they've tried, what makes the most sense, and Calpine. Everybody has a little different perspective. Our governing, if again you go with option two, our philosophy will be whatever makes the customer whole but doesn't create additional incentive or disincentive to participate or not.
So my understanding is that most people have a true-up date, but the true-up dates vary depending upon when they install their solar panels.
Or when they turn it on.
Yes.
Big difference.
I have a true-up date in, I think, mid-October. And I was just saying to Kathleen, at the moment I have a credit of about $1,200. I put on some more panels last November, and I'm trying to find out what the implications are as I work through the summer months. And so, if we trued up in August, my question then would be, well, what happens to the $1,200 in credit that I have? Does it automatically get carried over? Who pays whom for what? That whole issue. So these are some significant questions that we obviously need to address, and we're already heading towards the end of June for an August 1st start. So it seems to me this really has to be on the agenda for the next meeting.
We could put it on the agenda and hopefully inform you how best to implement that in a way that has no additional impact on the customer nor DCE.
And that's the policy we're adopting.
If you go with number two.
It should be a smooth transition, particularly with no adverse impact for the consumer. And at this point, we're not trying to incentivize anything until we learn more about what could be effective.
And I would definitely agree with your comments. Number two makes the most sense for me as well.
I could be okay with that for now. Yeah. Although I'd like to see us move to number three, because I think
we all would.
Yes.
I think from a
and given the other ones in Southern California all do it, I think we need, but let's get through this first period, but I would like us to bring that back to look at how we can do it.
And most of those other ones, of course, have been up and running a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it, right? We have a lot going on right now, but I want us to
We will agendize an update at the very least on your next meeting, and presuming you go with number two, effectuate that policy the best we can.
Great.
And again, if there's suggestions or recommendations that come out earlier, perhaps you can share those earlier, and then we'll be prepared at the next meeting. So.
It's So if you need a motion, I move to accept the recommendation in place two.
We have a motion and a second relative to option two on approving the energy metering program. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Take this item seven, information. And that's information. Yeah. Any questions on that? Erica, do you have any legislative update that you want to?
I would just note that AB 813 will probably be heard this week. It did appear on the committee agenda. So I imagine that so far it's still on for their first legislative hurdle.
We have a announcement of the executive committee meeting coming up on Monday the 25th and the general assembly meeting on Monday the 25th. And
Mr. Chair, oh, go ahead. You can adjourn. That's okay. I just was going to let you know we do have copies of the brochure. I'll pass those around. Those have been distributed to City Halls, and they will be distributed to the chambers and the library, so we're getting them out there. And if you want a bigger stack, I can make those available.
Sure, that would be great.
Would you like more?
Okay. Yeah.
Let me go grab a box.
I can have them in city council meetings also in July at all, because we're going out into neighborhoods on the districting. This would be great to have out.
And we did drop off a stack at City Hall. Yes, all your city halls have them.
Good luck with your districting.
It's be fun. I haven't even seen the demographic report. We're seeing it for the first time.
I missed when you were talking about legislative update. I think that you might want to read, this is Dan Walters, who's been writing in Sacramento forever, quite conservative.
I think you guys on the phone, you guys can leave.
He said this is a very complex issue that isn't sexy clickbait for the media, but they should be paying more attention. The politicians had better think very carefully before they vote for another power play just because it looks good on paper. This is a 813, as it still exists, is a big deal in terms of the transfer of decision making away from California to somebody else. And it doesn't, based on the assessment of the potential benefits, which are minimal, 1-2% they talk about for ratepayers, versus the risk associated with going into a new energy program. And Dan's point was most of us have forgotten about 22 years ago when we did this deregulation stuff. His point is just, and my point is, it's a big deal. I don't understand why the CCA Association is supporting it. I've seen their arguments, but I don't buy into them. But there are a lot of people working not to have this happen. I don't know what will happen, but I would have been more comfortable if our board had been able to make a specific decision about it in terms of does it make sense to us or doesn't it. Communicate that to the association that you belong to, but not necessarily be represented by that association if you don't agree with what the position they've taken. So, thank you.
We'll continue to watch, and this very well might end up on your next agenda. And I know it's late in the legislative cycle. These sorts of bills sometimes are after session closes. They have a funny way. Last time we remember was this was resurrected was come mid August.
Yeah, it's right in the middle.
And a CCA killing bill. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Put some extra if you'd like to take any extra brochures. There's a stack over there.
Yeah, on the major users matrix. When do you think we can get that part to board members?
How many meetings
do we have?